Welcome into a Monday night edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. We are wrapping up the Nets season with Joshua Bass in his grand return before he has to go back to Georgia. Spoiler. Then we're going to get into the best quotes from Kenny Atkinson and Sean Marks in their end of the season press conference, break those down, see if we could find deeper meaning in them. Where we can't find deeper meaning, we will make up deeper meaning, and if we have some time after that, we will get into the NBA playoffs. All right, Monday night edition, let's hit it.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I am your host, Gavin Shaw. After 4 years covering the Phoenix Suns, I moved back to my native New York to cover your Brooklyn Nets. And Josh Bass, he's a powerful man. He's a man on the move. He flies in planes more than anyone else I know. And he is back with us for this edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. Welcome back, Josh. Excited to have you.
Yeah, Gav, thanks. It feels so weird now because I feel like I'm always a guest on the pod.
Yeah.
Theoretically, it's our thing. I feel like
I know. I downgraded you to intern in the spreadsheet, but
yeah,
I wouldn't take that personally.
Same level now.
Yeah, considering promoting myself soon. But until that point, Josh, I didn't get to hear your thoughts on the last two games of the years. The Nets squeaking out a close win at home over the Chicago Bulls. That really wasn't that close. That it kind of felt like, to me, they were in control that whole game. Allen Crabbe dropping 41 points on 15 shots on his 26th birthday. Maybe the best single game performance any Net has had this year. I guess you could make an argument that the game didn't really matter that much, and they were playing one of the worst teams in the NBA, sitting a lot of key players, so maybe you take exception to that. But in terms of pure numbers, don't think you can really argue it. And then kind of disappointingly, they end the season losing in Boston to essentially the main Red Claws. What were your thoughts on the last two games of the year?
Yeah, well, I actually haven't gotten to see either of them, unfortunately. I was they don't take kindly to putting the Nets on the TVs in Savannah.
Is that true?
Or a station last week.
Definitely not the Yankees, but yeah, you might have gotten
actually, the Yankees were on national TV a couple times.
No, I know. I just figured they wouldn't like Yankees. Yeah, anyways, go ahead.
They're more of like a women's softball crowd.
Mm. Those are our people.
That's pretty big there. And no, I mean, Allen Crabbe, just watching hearing the box score on that, I still have to go back and watch the highlights. Like, just seeing him, I think I texted you, like, how is this happening at halftime of the game? Because he was just on fire. And then the Boston game, I mean, you can't read anything into it because it's the main Red Claws against basically the Long Island Nets. I think Milton Doyle took like 13 shots and played 25-30 minutes. So when that happens, you can't really take anything meaningful from the game.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, I would say my bigger concern that even like when like obviously you didn't have Spencer Dinwiddie or Joe Harris or Damari Carroll, all three of whom made a big difference this season. But the Nets did like play their guys for like a pretty significant portion of that game. And my biggest takeaway from that was it was just kind of a terrible matchup because the Celtics pseudo G League guys happened to be big, very physical, smart defenders, and that with a lot of athleticism. And that was kind of just combining, boiling down all like the Nets' weaknesses into one. Like if you were going to build a team of sub NBA guys specifically to beat the Nets, the Celtics basically have that, which adds insult to injury with all the draft picks the Nets have given them all over the years, but that's neither here nor there. Not that important.
The Nets, like, their guys, I mean, listen, Rondé, D'Lo, LeVert, like, these guys have all been in the rotation for the entire season when they're not hurt, and they're not really healthy, and they're not really, like, hungry, I'd say. On the other hand, they're playing, like, Abdel Nader, French Draymond, Jabari Bird. I mean, these guys are trying to, at least if they're not going to ever crack the rotation for the Celtics, which is probably unlikely, they're at least trying to show what they can do with minutes and hopefully impress another team. Because these are guys that are going to have a chance to be 12th or 13th men on other teams. They're just not going to have that opportunity on the Celtics. So obviously they're going to be really hungry when they do get the chance in an NBA game.
I think you might be short-selling French Draymond. That guy, That guy he's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, well, Bill Simmons thinks he's like Bill Russell, probably.
Yeah, yeah. No, well, he calm down. He's only said Larry Bird, but no, he's okay. I kind of like Jabari Bird.
Your own school of thought of the cross racial comparison.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was the first one he's ever done. Anyways, I guess the bigger thing I wanted to ask you is like now that this Nets season has kind of concluded, not with a bang but with a whimper. I wanted to hear your final thoughts on the year. Happy, sad, mad. Smiley.
Yeah, I mean,
you're smiling right now. That's a good sign.
Yeah, definitely not happy. Not mad. Definitely probably sad.
Okay.
I mean, I feel like the will was just beaten out of me throughout the course of these 82 games.
Yeah, you were so energetic at the beginning.
I really was, and Jared Allen was probably the bright spot the entire year. But guys, like LeVert, I really hoped he would take a huge leap. Took a mini leap. I'm still pretty confident about his future moving forward of being a quality role player at the very least. D'Lo really disappointed. Dinwiddie was pretty excellent. I don't know. I think the win total, 28 wins. I thought I was pretty low on them going into the season, saying like 30 to 32. And obviously Lynn being out the whole season hurt. But I think if Lynn got hurt, but you told me that Dinwiddie was able to really be a contributor as much as he did, like I still think they would be better than they ended up being.
Yeah.
And I think, like, I don't know. A lot of injuries. Rondé had a good season. Like, I feel like most people outperformed expectations when you look at it, besides D'Lo, I'd say. But it just, like, the sum of the parts didn't really add up.
Right, and obviously you could look at the record and say, like, the Nets lost a lot of close games, and those tend to be, I mean, not to the same degree it is in football, but, like, they tend to be random to some measure from year to year, so maybe that swings in the Nets' favor next year. But I'm kind of with you, and I don't want to go too far down this path, because I think we have a whole offseason ahead of us to really kind of explore these themes in depth. But I'm kind of with you where it's like a little bit like there were like certainly some exciting elements, but like it wasn't as good as it could be. Like if I had to put a grade on it, like I'd say maybe like a C plus, B minus, like somewhere in that range. Like there were some real definitive concrete positives. Like even like we didn't even mention like Rondé or Joe Harris and like the leaps that they made that are very impactful and turned those guys from far from definite parts of the future to guys who look like rotation staples for the Nets going forward. So but the issue is there, I think you hit it on the head mentioning D'Angelo Russell, is the biggest thing for the Nets was that they have a surefire star coming out of the season, and it's hard to say that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the problem. Like, I have complete faith that Kenny Atkinson can develop G League guys into role players and that Sean Marks can identify those second-rounders or random prospects that can become good seventh and eighth men. But how are the Nets going to get a top line guy, a second banana, a third banana even? Because I feel like obviously this year it's not going to happen because there's limited cap room and no draft pick. Next year, I mean, if they don't tank, I mean, it's going to be hard. I feel like they're probably going to be better than those 28 wins they had this year. And it's a pretty weak draft class from what I've heard. I think RJ Barrett obviously is going to be a stud, but besides him, everyone has flaws. So it's like, then are we waiting till 2020 to have potentially get a star? Like, I'm just kind of confused on what the direction is going to be moving forward.
Yeah. And the issue there is obviously just with what the Nets are doing. And there was that graphic in the final game of the season with essentially like all the best coaches in the league at different points in the year, guys like Greg Popovich and Steve Kerr going out of their way to complimenting Kenny Atkinson and the effort he's drawn from these role guys and his ability to get them playing at a level with the best teams in the league, not every night, but on some nights. I don't really think it's in the Nets' DNA to tank. So that's, and obviously just by the inherent limitations on the roster, they'll probably be one of the, I mean, obviously there's a lot of variables we don't know, but they'll likely be one of the 12 to 14 worst teams in the league last year and won't make the playoffs. But with their style of play, they're not likely to be one of the five worst. So that to me, it's kind of interesting, and obviously a lot can change there, and we don't know, and I don't want to go too far down this road now, because again, we're going to spend all offseason talking about it. All right, so let's take a quick break and remind everyone to send in some mailbag questions. I made a post on Twitter, I made a post on Nets Reddit. At some point, I don't know if it's going to be the next podcast or the one after that, depending on what the guest situation is, but we are going to do a mailbag pod, so please, please submit questions for that. Just submit questions. Thanks. Welcome back into the first postseason edition of the Locked On Nets, or at least the first post-2017-18 season Josh, you're just it flew by. I feel like we were just doing those preview pods, and now we're back in the same spot.
No, I completely agree. I remember when the Nets were like 2-0 in the preseason. Everyone's like finals, or at least like 8th seed.
Yeah.
I actually remember this. Yeah, start of the season really well. That first game against Indiana, I like remembered vividly that I was so impressed with Victor Oladipo, and that's carried out through the whole season. It really did fly by. I can't believe it's April already.
Yeah, no, it's wild. And the good news is you're going to have to reinduce more anxiety into your life so we can draw more grinds my gears from you down the road. But today we have enough content that we don't need that to happen because Sean Marks, Kenny Atkinson had their end of the season press conference. Shout out to Brian Fonseca, I might be butchering his name, and Brian Lewis for transcribing a bunch of quotes from those. I took those, I wrote down the ones that I thought were the most relevant, Josh. We're going to go quote by quote. I'm going to read them out to you. You let me know what you think. I'll play off you. It'll be classic podcast fodder. Okay, first one from Sean Marks on Kenny Atkinson. Look at how our players have improved last 2 years. I don't think we can argue with the job Kenny and his staff have done in developing talent. And I think we'd both agree that's true. And it is purely in terms of player development, this staff is up there with just about anyone in the league. And I think your issue throughout most of the year has been more game management. So I guess this is a long-winded way of asking you what you think of Kenny Atkinson as a coach at the moment.
I'm pretty happy with him right now. But I think with a more talented team in place, his flaws as a game manager and as someone that's so rigid in adjusting could kind of really be highlighted. Because right now, I mean, with the team they have in place, I'm not going to get like so upset. I mean, I have gotten really upset this year over AC playing like 35 minutes or what have you. But like since the team is so bad, it is what it is. And you need to look at the more incremental developments of the players. But he really has not shown a lot of acumen as an in-game coach. Just kind of not really reading the flow of the game, not making great halftime adjustments. Just like too much sticking to his system, even when the play of the game is dictating that you need to go a little bit bigger or maybe even smaller. I feel like, I don't know. I think he might be better as a – I'm a little worried he might be better as an assistant coach than as a full-time guy. But well, I have to give him another 2 years at least because I think he's still doing – the right thing with this team, and that there's no way I'd want to fire him now or even after next season.
Right, and there's something to be said. Obviously, in-game adjustments are a big part of coaching, but I think most people generally agree. Like the bigger element of it is not only how you improve your player skill sets, but how you prep your teams. And in terms of that, I think the numbers reflect really well with Kenny Atkinson in terms of how they've structured their defense to, I believe, allow the least threes per game in the NBA this year and force opposing teams in the most mid-range shots in the NBA this season. And obviously, that didn't totally prove successful. The Nets, I believe, finished 25th in the league in defensive efficiency, but you plug better defensive players into that system that are forcing those kinds of shots. I mean, logic dictates over time you're going to have a really, really good defense. So it's kind of similar to Philly a few years ago where the process is there and you just need the talent to draw results out of that. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
But is the Nets talent that bad that even though they like they force opponents into the worst shot selection in the league, they'd still be 25th in defensive rating?
Well, I think
it seems ridiculous to me.
Well, here I think it's in, and this is we are kind of stepping on a quote we're going to get to later on, but we could skip over it. I think part of that is a lack of athletic ability as a defense, and when you see the Nets have success, it's usually because of the skill of their guys and not really the athleticism up and down the roster. And the biggest indication of that is, I think Kenny Atkinson noted this during the press conference. It was actually one of our last quotes. He said, "We have to improve our activity and general energy defensively. We were 30th in the league in turnovers forced, presumably. Part of that was we played a pretty conservative defense and we fouled too much. If we're not turning teams over, you shouldn't foul." A defense, to me, that doesn't force a lot of turnovers and also commits a lot of fouls, that's indicative to lack of foot speed, lack of athletic ability, and I think they're working on bringing those guys in. Like, if you look at the last two drafts, like, the most athletic guys on the team are Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, and, I guess, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I feel like they should be – I'm confused why they play so conservatively on defense, because you'd think with a young team, they'd be really undisciplined and forcing a lot of turnovers, but also giving up a lot of open looks, so – interesting to see that it's a little bit inverted here.
Yeah, and I guess, and I think what the, I, and again, I think that's like a testament to like the type of guys they have, like someone like Spencer Dinwiddie, someone like Joe Harris, really, really smart defenders, not necessarily athletic enough to keep up with the best guys in the league, and they're going to get beat, and they're going to have to foul, and they're not going to jump passing lanes. So I think all that kind of comes together when you just look at the personnel the Nets have. And to me, that makes it even more fascinating who they'd bring in this offseason. All right, let's get to the next one and then maybe take a break after that. All right, second quote, marks on Jahlil Okafor / Nick Stauskas. It's difficult to bring in a player midseason. It took time to get him physically ready. I guess he's referring to both of them there. Get him physically ready to play. We're going to have to be creative in our approach looking at Jahlil and Nick. Does that mean they're bringing both of those guys back, or if they're considering bringing both of those guys back? I apologize for Miko the dog making his bed in the background. But Josh, what were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Okafor is not going to come back. I mean, he would have played at least against the Celtics if they had any plan for him in the future. Stauskas, if they need him on a cheap contract, I could see him getting brought back, but I don't think they'll lose any sleep over him because they shouldn't, because he's not really an NBA player.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Okafor, I do kind of feel bad for the guy because it seems like he really did everything that they asked of him and just he didn't get a shot at all. And he's just clearly, his pedigree dictates one thing, but like his real skill level says something else. So it's going to be hard for him to really get another NBA contract, in my opinion.
Right. And we've had that argument a few times, and I guess we'll know within the next like 4 or 5 months, like who's right on that, like whether or not teams see talent there, but you're certainly right. It is an indictment on a team like the Nets if they are not, and excuse me, not it's not an indictment on the Nets, it's an indictment on Okafor if a team like the Nets doesn't want to bring him back, this team that's not really in a position to give up on talent and has been taking shot after shot on guys specifically fitting his mold. I've said this before, I do think they should bring Nick Stauskas back. I think he's a good fit for the team, and like the juice he showed off the dribble, like pretends for a guy who could be an NBA player, which I didn't really think after 2 years of his career when he's really just a shooter and not even a particularly good one at that. All right, that was quick, so we'll keep going. Sean Marks on Joe Harris. Joe made it pretty clear from statements he's made he'd like to be here. The organization feels the same way, and that's kind of the same thing we saw or we heard from Joe Harris on Exit interviews when he said he's reiterated to his agent time and time again he'd like to stay in Brooklyn, and he understands what that staff did for him as a player, and he's talked to Sean Marks, he's talked to Kenny Atkinson, and he feels like they're all on the same page.
Yep, this is the emoji with the hard eyes. I mean, I'm just loving the way this sounds. If we can get him back on a contract, $5 to $6 million annually, that would be great, because he is really fun to watch, and he's also, I think the most difficult thing to watch is to see your team just brick open three-pointer after open three-pointer, and he's not someone that will do that, so it would be good to have him on the team, regardless of the other pieces.
Yeah, and obviously at a relatively low volume, but in the second half of the season, he turned into, I guess if you want to have this category for guys not averaging double digits, he turned into the league's most efficient single-digit scorer, leading the NBA in percentage, shooting percentage on drives, and after January 1st, leading the NBA in shooting percentage on top of the key threes. So that's a pretty deadly combination. It's exactly what the Nets want in an offensive player, so I think it's pretty obvious that he is going to be back, barring something traumatic happening, which obviously we'll keep our fingers crossed does not. All right, quote number four. This one I thought was kind of interesting. On looking to upgrade the interior, Sean Marks notes that Jared Allen will mature physically. Also says the Nets aren't looking for one specific piece, indicating their focus won't lie with improving one area. And to me, that's sort of surprising, because I really do think finding a stretch four that's better than Dante Cunningham and Quincy Acey, even though I know that's a very tough thing to do, should be a priority. But even if it is, that might not be something that he'd reveal in a press conference. So I thought that quote was kind of intriguing, that they're looking more to Jared Allen to become that physical presence inside than to bring someone in.
Yeah, I think Jared Allen, he's like a Pokemon that you know is going to be a stud.
Yeah,
he just needs to develop. You just need to let him evolve and get those levels and XP up, or is it XP or XP?
I think it's XP. I think you got it XP, right. Yeah. You say he's a Charmander right now, and it'll be a Charizard one day.
Exactly.
Why doesn't Pikachu ever evolve? That was always my big question. What's Pikachu going to be?
Wow, that's a good point. Never thought of it like that.
Okay, all right. Now submit that into the Nets mailbag conversation. Tell us what you think Pikachu is going to be. I'm sure someone definitely has an answer for that. But yeah, sorry, go ahead.
On the stretch forefront, like, I think it doesn't make sense to like say you specifically need any one position, because even if they got like a really good stretch four, like Mirotić or someone, that would be a huge upgrade on what they have now. the team's still going to suck. Like, they'll win maybe, like, 33 games. So, like, I don't think it really makes sense to be like, we need to get one position. We just need stars regardless of what position they're at.
Yeah.
And if it's stretch four, that'd be great. It's a point guard, that's great also. If it's a two, three, whatever.
No, that's fair. I would say the counter argument to that is, like, I think having someone who's at that spot who shoots 40% instead of, like, AC who shot, like, 34%, like, it just makes everything so much easier for every other guy on the floor. And someone like D'Angelo Russell, who needs as much of a runway as he can possibly get with his speed, like, the floor being, like, 10% more open like that, I think really makes a big difference in his development. Yeah. So that would be the case. Right?
Go after, like, someone like Tolliver, who'd be cheap but still a huge improvement.
He'd be awesome. Yeah, no, I think he's the quintessential guy, like, you and me are both looking at. Okay, we still got four quotes to go through, and I did want to get into the NBA playoffs with you, and I want to take advantage of the fact that you are going to be in Georgia the rest of the week. So we are going to split this one off into a part two. This one is going to drop Tuesday morning. We'll drop part two on Wednesday morning. More podcast goodies for you guys, and I think in general we're gonna look to start doing that, making them shorter and release more. Release them more frequently throughout the week, especially during the off season. So that'll wrap up this edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, part two, coming tomorrow.